Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. Thanks for being here. Let's see. First thing on the agenda is the minutes from March 19th. Representative Kraft, have you had a chance to read the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I would move their approval.
Great. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. And we have two bills on the agenda today. And so let's see. First up, we have House File 4700 with Majority Leader Long. Welcome back to committee, Mr. Majority Leader. Go ahead, get yourself settled. And when you're ready, nice tie, by the way. Please go ahead and introduce yourself. And actually, I think since you aren't on the committee, never mind. I have just to, one second. I move that House, pardon me?
You said his name right.
I know, I got his name right? And I even pronounced it right. I will move that House File 4700 be laid over for possible inclusion. And there is a DE, so I will also move that the DE5 will get the bill in the shape the author would like it. Any discussion on the DE? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. With that, Majority Leader Long, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair Akam. It's good to be back in the Climate and Energy Committee. And thanks for the compliment on my tie. I don't see her here yet, but Representative Hollins made it especially for me for the committee today. So appreciate the fashion help. So the 100% clean energy bill that we passed last year is one of the best in the nation and puts Minnesota back on the map for clean energy leadership. This means good jobs, cleaner air, and taking an important step to help address the state's climate impact. In last year's bill, we included several provisions designed to ease the permitting process for clean energy. It has become clear since then that more work is needed if we are to meet our clean energy goals in time. Right now, our transmission grid is constrained, which means that it is often prohibitively expensive for new renewable energy projects to interconnect, and we are also losing valuable renewable energy production to curtailment. We're also seeing projections of increased energy demand from data centers and electrification. Recognizing these needs, in 2022, the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, or MISO, approved the first phase of its long-range transmission planning projects. At $10 billion, Tranche 1 is the largest transmission expansion in U.S. history to meet growing energy demand and to facilitate clean energy, with three new lines proposed in Minnesota at $2 billion in value. Tranche 2 is working its way through the MISO process now and is set to be approved later this year. At 10 years on average, it takes us too long to build transmission. With business as usual, projects starting the process next year won't be online until 2035, just 5 years before we have committed the state to reaching 100% clean energy. We can absolutely do better than 10 years and must. The Public Utilities Commission agrees and did us a tremendous service by convening a robust stakeholder process, including 31 stakeholders across a wide range of interests that met several times this fall and presented recommendations to the legislature. The bill before us today is based in large part on the 12 top recommendations from the stakeholder process, which the report estimates could reduce permitting time by up to 9 months. I believe additional reforms included in this bill to speed up the timeline for utilities to file with the PUC, as well as savings on the planning and engineering side, could reduce overall time by more than a year. Some examples of the reforms included in this bill are reducing the transmission routes that need to be submitted from 2 to 1, which can limit public confusion over the preferred route, reframing the current alternative review process as the standard review process, and reserving the full permitting process for transmission lines that are over 345 kilovolts and at least 30 miles long, limiting contested case hearings to those where there is a dispute involving issues that would require expert testimony, and eliminating certificates of need for wind and solar projects and transmission designed to meet the 100% clean energy standard, as the need for these projects has already been set by the legislature. This bill does not limit public input. In fact, it would make it clearer to the public when they would be able to provide comments and more transparent for what the proposal would entail. I've been extremely impressed with the broad support this effort has gathered. Everyone from regulators to utilities to environmental groups have recognized the need to speed up the deployment of clean energy. This bill is our 100% Clean Energy Bill 2.0. It will facilitate our achieving our important state standard and will do so with common sense reforms that do not remove important environmental review or public input. With that, Madam Chair, I think I'd be happy to turn to testifiers.
Wonderful. There is quite a list. First on the list, we have Will Seifert, Executive Secretary with the Public Utilities Commission. Welcome to committee. Go ahead, introduce yourself for the record, and go ahead and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Will Seifert, the Executive Secretary for the Public Utilities Commission. As you know, the PUC is an independent, quasi-judicial regulatory agency made of 5 commissioners with the mission to improve the lives of Minnesotans by ensuring safe, reliable, and sustainable utility services at just and reasonable rates. Since 2005, the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission has been tasked with the siting of large energy generation and transmission facilities in the state of Minnesota. In an effort to ensure timely compliance with the new 100% carbon-free law, the Commission recently convened a stakeholder work group to discuss potential improvements to the permitting and environmental review process. The Commission received a report from the stakeholder group at a January 3rd, 2024 planning meeting with broad-based support for a package of reforms. These proposed reforms are incorporated in House File 4700 as introduced. The DE before you, however, inexplicably omits the foundational organizational reform, the transfer of EERA staff to the Commission, and creates additional processes that undermine the efficiency gains in the introduced version. Unlike other RGUs in state government, such as MPCA, DNR, DOT, the PUC does not employ its own technical staff to perform environmental review and permitting analysis. Rather, existing statutes require the PUC to rely on the EERA unit of the Commerce Department to function as a consultant on its behalf. This creates an inefficient system whereby every decision the Commission makes requires a public comment period to wait for EERA to file comments. Importantly, commissioners cannot talk directly with environmental review staff because they are housed outside the agency. Once the comments are received, internal commission staff must use the comments to prepare briefing materials for the commission, and commissioners can't speak with the technical staff until the public meeting. When the agency has to schedule meetings or issue notices, they have to be reviewed by staff at both agencies, adding extra time. These overlapping roles create duplication of work, complicating the simplest of administrative steps, and require a high degree of coordination to meet deadlines that frequently don't get met. And when the deadlines aren't met, questions inevitably get asked of the RGU, which is the commission. Estimates range between 30 to 60 days of time savings can be realized for each singular permitting step that requires a PUC decision by simply transferring the 11 FTE staff unit of EERA to the commission. Moreover, this dual arrangement confuses the public. It obfuscates decision-making and erodes public accountability, leaving the public having to discern who's who, what roles they play, and ultimately who can help address their concern. This confusion was a core finding of the report of the legislative auditor several years ago. The ability to deliver on the promise of real-time savings through administrative reform is built around this organizational change, and its omission undermines the time savings and other public benefits in this reform package. It's also worth mentioning that one of the major goals of the stakeholder group was to make the permitting process simpler. If you go to our website now, there are 6 different infographics to explain the distinct processes for different types of PUC approvals. And the hope for this permitting reform is to make that simpler. The bill, as introduced, combined multiple processes into one process for standard review and one process for major review. The DE before you, however, takes a piecemeal approach to repeal some parts of the existing wind statutes and retain others. Instead of applying the same requirements to all projects, there will continue to be a series of statutes and rules that apply only to wind projects. Variation across different types of permits adds complexity, confusion, risk for error, and thereby litigation, and ultimately slows down the review process. Given the recent introduction of this DE, we haven't had the time to work through all the amendment and try to address every issue, but there are some additional problems pertaining to the CN provisions, both how the exemptions are defined and the new requirements to analyze cost and permit proceedings and how that can be performed. We would hope to be able to work with the author on further changes and cleanups should this bill progress. This permitting reform stakeholder work, and now the legislation that was introduced, is a continuation of improvements that the Commission has made to ensure its regulatory process is accessible to the public and administratively efficient. Some recent examples of PUC-initiated improvements include a website overhaul that incorporates infographics and videos with instructions on how the public can get involved in PUC proceedings. The refreshed PUC website also includes a current list of open comment periods and an interactive project map highlighting where energy facilities have been permitted and where proposed facilities may be sited. A cross-agency work group to ensure consistency in the permitting processes and enhance public engagement. Increased use of hybrid and online-only meetings to increase opportunities for engagement with the public in addition to in-person meetings. And increased use of the consent calendar process to accelerate the pace of decision-making for undisputed matters, to name just a few. In closing, the Commission is strongly supportive of meaningful reform that can accelerate the permitting process without sacrificing public input. We have concerns that in its current form, the DE before you doesn't deliver on this promise and will raise expectations of developers, utilities, and the general public for quicker decisions that we don't believe can be delivered under the structure of the DE. Thank you for the opportunity to provide feedback.
Thank you for being here. Next on the list, we have Grace Arnold, Commissioner with Department of Commerce, and Representative Swazinski. I saw that you raised your question. We'll do questions after testimony, if that's okay. Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner.
Hello. Good afternoon, Chair Acom and members of the House Energy Committee. For the record, my name is Grace Arnold, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I'm here today to speak in broad support of Majority Leader Long's bill, House File 4700, which would make important updates to Minnesota's energy permitting process. We have two main goals when looking at permitting reform. The first is that any changes ensure that we meet the 100% by 2040 statutory requirements. And the second is that any changes increase operational efficiencies and provide regulatory clarity. In that context, permitting reform that allows for smoother build out of transmission and continued expeditious permitting of storage and clean energy is extremely important. This bill contains many elements that are important to meeting our climate goals. The department particularly recognizes that there are some key components that will help unlock this path forward, and therefore we're in broad agreement with many portions of this bill. We also see areas where the bill could be clarified and look forward to working with Majority Leader Long, Chair Acom, and other members as the bill moves forward. I'd like to highlight two of those areas. First, while we're open to a conversation around certificate of need, we believe that the process needs to remain and potentially be reformulated but not eliminated. In particular, the certificate of need process remains vitally important for transmission projects. With the passage of 100% by 2040, it might seem initially logical to eliminate the evaluation of need for pretty much any clean energy project. Almost all will probably be needed to meet statutory requirements. But the certificate of need process serves multiple purposes. It considers both the energy need and the cost relative to alternatives that address the same need. So there are still important financial and practical system-wide issues to consider. For example, the certificate of need process can be used to evaluate whether we are getting the clean energy we need at the best price, or to ask whether there are other cheaper solutions. For example, another example is that transmission upgrades, it can ask the question, should they include reconductoring or other grid-enhancing technologies? Are there different system configurations that should be considered? And are there other generation projects that should be factored into the need analysis? The answers to all these questions are important to ensure we meet our 100% statutory requirements affordably and reliably. Second, the department is currently the home of the Energy Environmental Review and Analysis Unit, known as EERA. The department always has been open to the move of ERA to the commission as part of a broader permitting reform package aimed at achieving our 100% by 2040 statutory requirements. In a move, we see a need for a process that provides clarity about the way the transition would occur and a final state that ensures clearer processes and operational efficiencies are gained. That team has knowledgeable, professional, and dedicated staff, and the work they do is important to the permitting process. I want to recognize that that is a key difference between the bill before the committee today as amended and the bill moving in the Senate. And I look forward to working collaboratively with Majority Leader Long, Chair Acom, other legislators and stakeholders as this bill moves through committee to ensure the final result expedites the permitting process in meeting 100% by 2040. Thank you again for the opportunity today.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next is Ellen Gleckner with Fresh Energy. Welcome to committee. Welcome back to committee, Mr. Gleckner. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Sorry, I was so far away there. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam. Alan Gleckner with Fresh Energy. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Alan Gleckner, and I'm here on behalf of Fresh Energy Fresh Energy is a Minnesota-based, independent, clean energy nonprofit working to achieve carbon-neutral economies by mid-century. We're here in support of House File 4700 as a measured update to Minnesota's electricity infrastructure permitting and approval process that increases efficiency, is more tailored to the electricity technologies and systems of today, and will increase the speed with which Minnesota can deploy new clean energy infrastructure. We appreciate the bill authors and the Public Utilities Commission's leadership to bring this update forward, because as part of our transition to a carbon-free electric system, they recognize that bringing on more generation and grid infrastructure at an increased speed and scale is critical for both reliability and decarbonization, as well as managing cost and taking full advantage of IRA incentives. We were participants in the Commission stakeholder process that provided the basis for this legislation, and our priorities were to support process improvements that would speed clean energy deployment, but not at the expense of thorough record development or public participation. The Commission stakeholder process brought in multiple viewpoints and the state's leading experts on these processes. Thanks to this group's thorough and thoughtful work providing the starting point, we believe this bill more than meets our objectives of increasing speed and efficiency while prioritizing public participation. Thank you for the opportunity to support this bill today.
Thank you, Mr. Gleckner. Next on the list, we have Madeline Smirillo. Improvement, right? Welcome back to committee. Go ahead and state your name for the record to proceed.
Thank you, Chair Akam and committee. Yes, Madeline Smirillo with Clean Grid Alliance. You nailed it. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify. As you have heard in the last few weeks, Clean Grid Alliance is a nonprofit organization based in St. Paul, representing work in nine states across the upper Midwest. Our membership consists of primarily large-scale renewable energy developers and other NGOs who have stake in these policies. We want to express our support for House File 4700 and the substantial time savings it would implement for Minnesota's energy permitting process. We participated robustly in the stakeholder group that took place this fall. It was a joy to see all these groups coming together and collaborating on such important policy and really working through the kinks of what our current process is with our eyes forward on how we can make things move better. This bill has a couple of key reforms that we strongly support. The first is the fact that it would allow designated PUC staff to determine when a permit application is complete rather than requiring an order from the commissioners. That can save applicants up to 60 days, which is something we've heard from our members over time and time again, that this is a change that is simple, makes sense, and can save time. The second is that the bill exempts all wind and solar projects from certificate of need requirements, including the generation tie lines that are needed to connect them to the grid. This emphasizes that all new wind and solar are going to be constructed to meet the new renewable energy and carbon-free standards that we set into law last year. Inclusion of the gen tie lines is really essential, and it's something this bill does very clean and clear, which we really appreciate, as it's important that the interconnection that we're building alongside the projects is also exempt from the process of the certificate of need requirement. These reforms will be essential to the efficient permitting of both the transmission and generation that will be needed to reach Minnesota's 100% carbon-free standard. The collaboration of the permitting reform stakeholder group that generated these ideas was an unprecedented and cross-cutting effort worthy of legislative follow-up. We look forward to continued collaboration on the bill to ensure that it is in the shape that matches the intentions of the permitting reform stakeholder group, including the re-inclusion of the environmental review staff shift to the appropriate RGU, the PUC. CGA respectfully asks that the committee move favorably on House File 4700, demonstrating your support for ongoing clean energy development across the state. And to close, I want to thank especially Chair Akam and Majority Leader Long for your continued leadership on clean energy issues and this essential policy to meet our needs. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Aurora Vatran with the 100% campaign. Welcome to committee. Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Chair Eco, members of the committee, my name is Aurora Vatran, and I'm the legislative director for 100%. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on HF 4700, and thank you, Representative Long, for your work on this bill and your ongoing commitment to decarbonizing our state. I also want to thank the participants of the PUC stakeholder work group who spent months working to thoughtfully and carefully craft the recommendations that are the foundation of this bill. Over the last few years, thousands of Minnesotans have made their demand for an equitable clean energy future clear. Last session, you heard them by passing a nation-leading clean energy standard. And while this bill may not seem quite as exciting as 100%, it is just as important to getting us there. We know that we need an expedited permitting process for wind and solar to cut redundancy and meet our clean energy needs. And we know we must maintain robust environmental review, earnest public input, and thoughtful consumer protections. We recognize that there are some slight differences between the House and Senate drafts of this bill, but we trust the authors, the committee, and the chairs, and know that the final vision will reflect our shared vision for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vautrin. And then we have some people who signed up for public testimony. And I would maybe just encourage, given how many folks we have testifying, that we can try to limit our comments to 2 minutes. First, we have Deb Bergen with Missouri River Energy Services. Thank you so much. Welcome to committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Aikum, members of the committee. My name is Deb Bergen. I am with Missouri River Energy Services. As many of you on the committee know, Missouri River Energy Services is a not-for-profit municipal power agency headquartered out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We serve 61 communities that own their own municipal electric utility. 25 of those are located in Minnesota. As we discussed permit reform both before the session began and into session, MRES, Missouri River Energy Services, has expressed several times, while we appreciate streamlining the permit process, one of our concerns is that it be done so with an eye towards protecting landowners as well, because obviously it's the utilities who end up working with landowners on these projects. So we are particularly concerned with protecting their interests as well. To that end, in Section 6, line 7.20 of the DE amendment, there's language that says that the utility shall submit one line and one site. We would encourage some language that would alleviate that or allow some flexibility that would allow us to file an alternative site or an alternative route if the case should arise. This would allow us to have more flexibility to work with landowners who may be concerned about the route or routes that a high voltage transmission line may take. So we would urge some more flexibility to that section. Additionally, in Section 5 of the bill, this amends 216B.246, which is the right of first refusal. In it, it has some language that would allow, after there has been approval of a RTO-approved multi-state line, a MISO-approved line, that you would have 30 days to submit your written notice of ownership or potential to own that line. We would urge a longer point of time. Currently, the law allows for 90 days. We feel 30 days is a little too short. Oftentimes, the MISO transmission energy plan comes, transmission expansion plan may come in towards the end of the year. At that time of year, when we have Thanksgiving, Christmas, other things going on, end of the year reports, 30 days might be a little too truncated. So we would urge at looking, keeping the 90 days or the benefit of the bargain, perhaps even looking at 60 days. Remember, we utilities often co-own lines like the CapEx 2020, and more time would allow us to coordinate our efforts together, as well as to look to see if there's any coordination to be done with SPP. Remember, it's not just MISO, it's also the Southwest Power Pool. And to that end, I thank the committee for having me here today.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Next on our list, we have David Moeller with Elite and Minnesota Power. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. David Moeller, Senior Regulatory Counsel for Elite and Minnesota Power. I'm happy to provide comments today in support of House File 4700. We want to thank Majority Leader Long for bringing forward this important bill. I've worked on these issues for almost 19 years at MP, including routing over 350 miles of transmission lines. These are very important for the legislature to consider. Elite and our family of businesses, including Minnesota Power, Elite Clean Energy, and New Energy Equity, are an electric utility, a wind developer, and a solar developer. Minnesota Power has significantly decarbonized our system and currently delivers 60% renewable energy to our customers, the most in Minnesota. The bill before you today will make efficiency improvements in the process of approving, siting, and routing large electric infrastructure facilities that are critical to our ability to reliably transition our system to a carbon-free future. Together as a package, the recommendations in this legislation can save multiple months for each project pursuing permit approval. The time saved in the permitting process multiplies quickly as the significant number of projects and proposals that will be necessary in the coming years increase. ELITE was proud to participate in a broad, diverse group of stakeholders convened by the Commission and facilitated by former Commissioner Dan Lipschultz. We think this process was a terrific model that should be replicated where critical permitting reforms are also needed. This bill includes several of their proposals, but we believe including more of the group's recommendations, such as streamlining environmental review under the Commission's purview with the transfer of EERA to the Commission, which we think is a central component of furthering this energy and permitting process, is necessary and should be considered going forward. We look forward to continuing our collaboration on legislation and finding ways it can further improve the process at the Commission. We are grateful for Majority Leader Long's leadership and continued engagement on these important permitting issues. Thank you, and we're available for questions when appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen. Next, we have Amelia Voss with the Minnesota Center for Energy and the Environment. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Acom and members of the committee. My name is Amelia Voss. I'm an attorney at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, or MCEA. MCEA is a 50-year-old nonprofit organization that uses facts, science, and the law to protect Minnesota's environment and the health of its people. Our niche is that we have lawyers on staff that are well-versed in the laws around project permitting and environmental review. I work primarily on advocating for the clean energy transition before the Public Utilities Commission, and I am here to testify in support of House File 4700 as amended. MCEA was a member of the stakeholder group that provided the basis for this legislation, and we thank Dan Lipschultz for convening that group and for summarizing a lot of key feedback that group provided. Our priority in that working group, and now for this bill language, is to ensure we achieve meaningful permitting reform for clean energy projects without losing important input from landowners and the public affected by a project, and without creating unintended consequences as we move and shift the law. We believe this bill does just that. It implements the reforms recommended by the working group, it doesn't compromise public input, and it doesn't create unintended consequences. And we thank Majority Leader Long for his work on this bill language. We particularly support this bill language's choice not to move the DOC EERA staff from the Department of Commerce to the Public Utilities Commission. The DOC EERA staff conducts environmental review for all projects that the Public Utilities Commission permits. This includes fossil fuel projects such as large petroleum pipelines like Line 3. Those environmental review documents are key documents that provide important information to the public and that the public relies on to understand the implications of a project. Because this stakeholder group did not include groups who care deeply about petroleum pipeline issues and who rely on that information, we believe that it's premature to discuss moving DOC EERA in this bill without including those important voices who care deeply about the process that goes into petroleum pipeline permitting. As it stands now, there is transparency between the communications between the Department of Commerce EERA staff and the Public Utilities Commission, and that transparency is valued, and I don't think we should remove that transparency without including other voices, including sovereign tribal governments who care quite a bit about the pipeline permitting process and were not part of this clean energy reform process. We look forward to the opportunity to engage further with Majority Leader Long and stakeholders throughout the legislative process to ensure we continue to get this important bill language right. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of it today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Dan Lesher with, Great River Energy. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Lesher. I'm the manager of transmission, permitting, and land rights with Great River Energy. Great River Energy is a generation and transmission cooperative, and we're owned by our 27-member distribution cooperatives. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to provide testimony on House File 4700. While the current permitting process is not broken, there are opportunities to make sensible statutory changes to streamline the permitting process without taking away public due process. It is important that whatever changes are made to streamline the permitting process, they provide a clear and flexible path for future transmission permitting. We appreciate Representative Long's willingness to consider a suggestion on minor alterations and permit amendments related to upgrades or rebuilds of existing transmission lines. We would like to suggest striking language starting at line 22.12 so that we delete everything after 300 kV through the end of line 22.14. We want to make sure that we have flexibility to place a new line in a location that works for landowners. This could mean a move greater than 50 feet. We might also suggest that there may need to be some additional clarification on the applicable projects listed under the standard route permit review section. For example, on line 17.8, the new language refers to lines that are between 100 to 300 kilovolts of any length. This addition encompasses a number of other projects that are listed in the subdivision. Perhaps this list could be modified and streamlined to make it clearer what projects meet the standard review threshold. Great River Energy appreciates the opportunity to provide testimony on the proposed changes. This is an opportunity to make needed changes to existing statutes that make the process more efficient and clearer for all project stakeholders. Great River Energy welcomes any assistance that we can provide Representative Long in discussing proposed changes. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And last on our list, we have Matt Langan, permitting manager with Xcel Energy. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Matt Langan. I'm with Xcel Energy. I'm a permitting manager. With respect to a previous comment, this bill may not be as exciting as the 2040 bill, but as a permit nerd, I find it very exciting. thank you, Representative Long, for your leadership in drafting this legislation. Thank you to the House Committee for your support and consideration of these legislative changes. I am one of the members, a proud member of the stakeholder group of the committee that worked to make these recommendations to the Public Utilities Commission and that are reflected in the legislation. I'll say very quickly that three major pieces emerged as unilaterally important to the stakeholder group. One is that we simplify the permitting process. The various permitting processes can be simplified into one or two processes. That does not make it only more understandable for practitioners like myself, applicants like myself, but importantly to members of the public. They have a predictable, unified, understandable review process that they can easily participate in. Second important piece is that it's one of the benefits of the Minnesota review process is the opportunity for public input. Every project that Xcel Energy proposes is improved every single time by local and individual input. And so those are preserved in the legislation. And then finally, we, as Xcel Energy, we develop transmission, we develop wind projects, we develop solar projects. So our projects are touched, all projects are touched by this legislation. And we know that we have a great deal of development in the decade plus in front of us. And so the timing, that was another piece of the stakeholder group. The timing is now to really look at this streamlined permitting reform that still preserves that public input. Now, what I'll say is that this is complex stuff for sure. And we are interested in still continuing to work with Representative Long, members of this committee, to make sure that this is all you know, perfect. And so we have offered, rather than detailing each of the areas where XL Energy might offer a change or an amendment, we have placed at your spots a letter identifying a few of those areas where we think adjustments could be made again to benefit not only applicants but the public especially. Thank you for the time today. We appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And I will also point out to members that there are a series of letters in our packets as well for people to look at. With that, that is all of the public testimony, and so we can turn to discussion on the bill. I think Representative Swazinski had some questions.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just appreciate it. Would Commissioner Arnold, could you come to the testifying table? Are you still here?
Is Commissioner still? She may have stepped out, but we do have other people from the department, if that would be okay.
That'd be fine.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Welcome to committee. Ms. Miltich, please state your name for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, committee members. I'm Louise Miltich. I'm Assistant Commissioner of Regulatory Affairs in the Division of Energy Resources at the Department of Commerce.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Just a quick question. So one of the kind of the key components of this was the transfer of employees. So in the original bill, those 11 employees were moved to the
PUC,
and now they've been moved back. And we heard in your testimony that part of the reason and the concern for that was that those 11 employees had dual use. So it wasn't that they simply did transmission, but they had other regulatory duties and review. Could you kind of speak to the fact of, like, from a percentage of workload for those 11 employees, what kind of, if you were to say if there's 100 hours being spent by that group, what is being used for different sections of review?
Ms. Miltich.
Chair, Representative, off the top of my head, I can't give you a very precise breakdown. That's something we could bring back. That is a way that we track our time. We're able to see, you know, which kinds of projects and very specifically which projects staff are spending their time on. So that is something we would be happy to bring back.
Sounds good.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd appreciate that. I know that was fairly in-depth. If you knew that off the top of your head, I would have been pretty impressed. Mm-hmm. And then just on top of that, just from a, you know, obviously, you know, whenever we make a change, we can estimate on time saved. So by not having those transferring employees move, how do you feel will that affect from a timing standpoint, from a communications will that affect the length of wait for these projects?
Chair.
Ms. Miltich.
Representative. It depends on which part of the process. I think actually Public Utilities Commission, Will Soifert, spoke a little bit to the kind of dynamics of what needs to happen in the process when that function sits outside of the Public Utilities Commission. And to just kind of reiterate some of what you heard from him, each time that there's a need for communication between those technical staff and the Public Utilities Commission, it involves a public filing, you know, a request for comments from the commission, a public filing by those staff. Public Utilities Commission staff then pick up that filing from the Department of Commerce. They review it, synthesize it, brief commissioners, and then it goes to the commission for a decision. And all of those steps take time.
And I will just say before turning it back, I think in the PUC task force report, they estimated about a 6 week savings over the total permitting time. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the 6 week saving time would not be if those employees are not transferred to the PUC?
That was the estimate.
You wouldn't save that amount of time now because of the amendment. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just from a review standpoint too, just kind of honing in a little bit more on that particular area. So it's my understanding, just looking at the amendment, that this would particularly focus on, this could be to the majority leader, Madam Chair. So this would only apply for only wind and renewable projects, that the shortened review would take place?
Representative, Majority Leader Long.
Thank you for the question, Representative Swazinski. No, it also applies to transmission projects as well.
Representative Swazinski.
Madam Chair, just so only transmission projects that are wholly and completely transferring electricity that are generated by renewable?
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you for the question. No, it would be transmission projects that are designed to achieve the 100% clean energy standard as drafted.
Representative Swisenski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if the transmission project would be dual use, so let's say you had a project, Madam Chair, Representative Long, that would be essentially you had wind, solar, but also baseload energy of a natural gas plant. And those were all tied together with the idea that you would use that same line to do all three. What would be the process for that? Or are we thinking we would build the line with the idea that natural gas doesn't exist and then add that later so you can have the quicker time? Or like how does that, like I'm just trying to like envision, like because it's a MISO grid and because electricity moves in and out and through the system back and forth, not just one direction sometimes, like how do we make that determination that it is 100% carbon free?
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you for the question. So the language is not that it has to be 100% carbon free on the line. It's that it has to facilitate meeting the goals of the 100% clean energy standard. So if adding the line is going to permit more renewable energy to come online, which all of the MISO proposed projects will, then it would meet the requirements of the bill.
Representative Swisenski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Long, would that include hydro?
Majority Leader Long.
Yes, that it would. That is considered carbon-free.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? Yeah. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we have the department here, I really wanted to know what your thoughts were if we move the EERA to the PUC and how that would impact the operations of Commerce.
Ms. Milpich.
Chair, Representative, my understanding is that this version of the bill doesn't have the move, but if the move occurred, all of those staff would move over and all of their functions would also move over to the Public Utilities Commission. Those functions would no longer sit with the department.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. And so there was a testifier that said that they had concern about something like an oil pipeline. Do you have any concerns about that being able to be handled within the PUC and within the purview of the EERA if they move to the PUC?
Ms. Milpich.
Chair, Representative, I will just reiterate what my commissioner said, that the department has been open to the possibility of that move happening as part of a broader permitting package, and I think that's still where we stand.
Majority Leader Long, did you have a comment you wanted to make?
Well, I was just going to note that, you know, the policy decision is ours to make as the legislature. I think that it is an important conversation. I think it's one that you heard there were different points of view on. But I'm sure it'll be a conversation we'll continue as it's in the Senate bill.
Absolutely. Representative Rarick, did you have any other questions?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so Commissioner Arnold had spoke to the not eliminating the certificate of need because it also considers costs, not just, you know, do you need the energy, but also factoring in the cost. And I'm wondering if the majority leader would just speak to that just a little bit about his thoughts about when you eliminate the certificate of need in this manner. The department is very concerned about not having a proper review of consideration of the cost. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that and how you would make sure that we're still looking at that as well. I'm talking so you can look it up.
Thank you.
Trying to give you a little time. Because I do think that if we're going to be moving to our goals for 2040, we need to consider costs or we're going to drown the state in very expensive energy.
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you. Maybe Mr. Elif can bail me out on the line number, but what I'll tell you, we do have language in here that, here we go. I believe it's on page 24. Is that correct, Mr. Elif?
Elif is nodding.
So lines 24.3 to 24.8, we have additional language that we are adding for cost review in the permitting process so that it could come in later in the process. It is certainly our intent that there be a cost review at the Public Utilities Commission, but felt like this would be a more streamlined approach to have it be a part of one docket rather than have it be a certificate of need and a permit review.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that answer, Majority Leader Long. Moving on to some more discussion about certificate of need, Xcel Energy put up in front of us a letter and their concern about shortening the time going from 18 months to 9 months dealing with the certificate of need in your DE. And they had suggested maybe 18 months was more realistic. Do you have any thoughts about making that change as directed in this letter or concerns addressed in this letter?
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Rarick. I appreciate the feedback from the utilities, and I was hoping that this hearing today would help get some consensus around that. I'd heard different time limits from different stakeholders. Certainly, I believe that it is human nature to take the time that you are given, and we see if 18 months is permitted, that 18 months is usually what is taken. And same with the 90 days versus what we have in the bill for 30. So I'm certainly open to discussion with stakeholders about what is reasonable. I think that we have to strike the right balance between making sure that we are not padding the time unnecessarily, because these are important projects that we want to get moving, and making sure that the work can get done so the applications that are submitted are high quality.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, I would highly hope that you're speaking with Xcel, because they have been at the tip of the spear of moving in the direction that you want and have been national leaders. And so if they're saying they need a little more time, I would definitely listen to what they have to say. So I'll just leave it with that. So also we had, let's see. So Missouri River had some concerns. And I'm sure you were listening to all those. And they were concerned about protecting landowners and allowing a little bit more flexibility. And that was specifically on line 7.20. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about making that a little bit more flexible so that we are protecting landowners.
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Rarick. So I do think it's important that we have one route. This was a recommendation that came from the working group. And I think that part of the concern that I have is when you have two routes, there is a lot of confusion for the public about there's always going to be a preferred route that the utility has in mind for what they actually want to build. So in some ways, they're putting up a bit of a shadow boxing exercise with a second route that landowners may get very concerned about and think is going to get built, but really there's no intent to build it. So that's been my concern. It also adds time to the process. You have twice the number of landowners who are concerned about a proposal. You have additional work that you have to do to submit two routes versus one route from an engineering and planning standpoint. So it's certainly, we don't want to have there be any, we want to maintain the ability for the PUC to make adjustments to the route. So if landowners have specific concerns, you can move the route. If there are environmental issues or other issues, you can move the route, and that's still maintained. But at least from the proposal, I do prefer having one route, and that is the approach that other states take as well.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you point in your DE, because we did just get it not too long ago, about where that allows that flexibility?
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you for the question. So I believe that's an underlying statute. I don't think that we made any adjustments to the Public Utilities Commission's existing authority to change the route.
Okay.
And Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Final question. And so then Great River Energy came up and had two sections of areas of issue and concern, starting at line 22.12 going through 22.14. Can we get to that? Page 22.
Yep.
Okay. I'm wondering if you have any response to those concerns on that section, 22.12, 22.14.
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Rarick. I took notes, and I'm happy to review that and follow up with GRE on it.
Representative Burke?
Yep, just one final thing. Thank you. I know I said final, but GRE also had concern on, I believe it was 17.8. And so I guess your answer is that you'll be following up with GRE to make sure that their concerns are addressed.
Representative, Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that is my response. I think we want to make sure that we're getting this right. We want to make sure that we have good consistency. I'm glad the bill is being laid over because I think these are really tough, knotty issues to work through. And I want as many eyes on this bill as we can because we want to get very broad agreement that this is doing what we want and that we have broad stakeholder buy-in.
Great. All good. Next on the list, Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think one of our testifiers said that they were a permitting nerd, and I am too. This is exciting. This is an exciting day for me. I've been following us and working on this for years, so I appreciate the fact that we could have this conversation today. Thank you to my colleagues for pointing out some of the stuff that we had some concerns about. But to start, I just had a few questions for the Majority Leader. And what I wanted to just, I want to make sure I have it right. What sort of projects are we going to be making sure to help with this bill in front of us today? Just so I got that clear.
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you for the question. Transmission and renewable energy projects.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What kind of renewable energy projects?
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you for the question. Wind, solar, and storage.
Okay. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So wind, solar, battery storage. All right, so I did want to ask on that, what is needed to make sure we have the things needed to make wind, solar, and battery storage?
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think that's in my bill.
Representative Igo.
You made my point for me, Majority Leader. That's not in your bill. So the things needed to build wind, solar, and battery storage, taconite, copper, nickel, none of that was included in the bill today, yet many testifiers before us today said that this would be helping us reach our clean energy goals. So what we're doing is we're going to advocate for projects to be going quicker through this project or this process that aren't actually going to have the resources needed to do it in a way. So the projects located all around this state have been forgotten in your legislation. You've picked winners and losers to be a part of this conversation today. And I think that is very, very disappointing for multiple Minnesotans across the state, for communities like mine that I represent up on the Iron Range, to communities across our state that we're maybe trying to get other projects to help build out the clean grid and build the things that we need. Because right now, as you're well aware, we get all of our solar ingots from China that are mass-produced in places across the seas, shipped across in high carbon CO2 emitting tankers and then coming to our country and then getting built in our backyard with taxpayer dollars. Your bill isn't accomplishing what you're trying to do, which is trying to expedite the permitting process to get us to a point where we can have these clean energy things without actually getting at the root of it. We're pushing out projects. I mean, I've had, oh my gosh, $2 billion worth of private investment in my district alone that has left the state due to permitting problems. None of it had to do with what your bill is addressing today. It had to address with the air and water permits that for projects like Huber Engineered Woods, which would have been the second largest investment, private investment in the state of Minnesota history, $550 million left the state due to permitting problems. So I apologize for getting a little passionate and heated about this, but when I saw a permitting bill coming before it, I said, wow, we're finally going to get there. We're going to do the right thing because it's not a partisan issue. Permitting is incredibly important to the future of this state and for jobs and for communities, from workers, for families. And this bill in front of us today is for getting all of that. I was at an event last night for Better in Our Backyard. I'm wearing their pin right now. It's got a pickaxe for mining right next to it. And what's right next to it? The same windmills that are on your tie. We need both. And I'm really disappointed today that this committee is going to hear a bill that's going to focus on making sure we can have wind, solar, and battery storage and transmission without getting at the root cause of building this thing out and letting Minnesota be a leader. So I just had to say all that. I'm incredibly disappointed, and we could have done a lot more on this bill.
Representative Long, did you want to
respond? Sure, happy to respond. We're in the Energy Committee. We're dealing with projects that are in front of the Public Utilities Commission. None of the projects you mentioned are in the Public Utilities Commission's jurisdiction. I think it's perfectly reasonable to have those discussions in other committees or other bills or other formats. I do hope that you support this bill. It sounds like you want to see the things that we are having move forward in this bill. We want to see these projects get built faster. You have it on your lapel pin, as you mentioned. So I'm looking forward to your vote yes on the floor.
And last questions by Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one more question, just from a workload standpoint, this, if I could get the Department of Commerce testifier to come before us again, that would be fantastic.
She's still here. She's
right
here.
Oh, you're still there.
I am still here.
Oh, you're great. I should look up. No, I appreciate that. So just kind of a general question. We talked a little bit about kind of workload and how that spread out with those kind of review staff. You know, if we're shortening time with some projects and kind of tightening that up with some projects, how will that workload get spread out? So like if we're tightening the amount of time for review, we're tightening the amount of time that staff have to work on something, how will that, you know, I'm kind of thinking from like a toothpaste and a tube, right? So if we're shrinking this end, you know, how does that process work within the toothpaste tube? Will it kind of create a little bit longer times for other projects that they're under current review?
Ms. Miltich.
Chair, Representative, that's a good question. Majority Leader Long might be able to speak to more of the specific components of the bill, but there are things baked into this bill along with a transfer of staff that actually do change workload, just in terms of, for example, the environmental assessment under the standard process would be prepared by the applicant. That puts staff in a position where they're reviewing materials that are submitted by the applicant as opposed to creating them from whole cloth. So there are some kind of checks and balances baked into it.
Majority Leader Long, did you have anything
to add? I think that's a good example.
Great. Representative Susinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just Representative Long, so if we have less, so is this, is the plan is that, that if they're not creating these, or maybe to the testifier from the department, does that mean that those staffers will have less to do by not having to create that from whole cloth, those environmental reviews?
Ms. Miltich.
Chair, Representative, on those projects where an applicant is submitting the environmental assessment for the review of staff, they would be dedicated to just reviewing it. That would arguably limit their workload on that. I think we anticipate that there will be a corresponding increase in the number of projects that staff see coming through for permitting as we're looking at trying to achieve the 100% by 2040 objectives. So again, there, I think there is some balancing that ends up happening.
Representative Susan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the environmental review, so we're going to allow the private entities to prepare those themselves in this particular case. Do you think there would be value to allowing other entities across the state for other types of projects to prepare those environmental reviews and create those environmental reviews to kind of help save the state time?
I think that maybe is out of the purview, but Majority Leader Long, did you want to?
I think that's beyond the scope of this bill, and probably unfair to ask the Department of Commerce to weigh in on other departments.
I think so. Any other questions, Representative Swazinski?
I'm good.
Okay, good. We have one final question from Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Long, for a bill on permitting reform and. How long, I'm just curious, how long have you been advocating for permitting reform?
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you for the question. Our 100% bill that we had passed last year included three pieces of permitting reform, and I carried that bill for 5 years before we passed it.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Long. This is a positive step, I think, for permitting reform, but as my colleague, Representative Igel, pointed out, you know, the points he made has everything to do with wind, solar, and battery storage, because as he pointed out, we need the minerals, the critical minerals, to go along with that. So I see you are passionate about permitting reform, and you are the majority leader. Could I possibly get you on record to work with us across the aisle? Because if one thing we're learning in my first biennium is that balance in government is very important and bipartisanship is very important, would you be willing to work with our side of the aisle on getting permitting reform done, say, when it comes to mining?
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the question. So I don't get to carry very many bills as majority leader, and I got to pick one this year, which is a follow-up to the 100% clean energy bill. So I don't think I have the capacity to work on additional legislation this year, but I would hope, given your support for permitting reform, that we're going to have 100% green votes from both sides of the aisle when this bill comes to the floor.
And I will only maybe just add to that, that this is certainly establishing a good model that can be looked at in other areas. So, Representative Davis, any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that, Representative Long, Majority Leader Long. And I'll just finish with this. You're the Majority Leader. You can help us with this if you so choose. Thank you.
Before I turn it back to the Majority Leader for closing remarks, I just want to thank you for all the work on this bill. I know that it has been a lot of time and energy and bringing a lot of voices together, and I think you've done a really great job at finding kind of the sweet spot. And so as there have been issues being addressed today, there's certainly going to be time for the Majority Leader to continue to work on this bill. But with that, Majority Leader Long, any final comments on your bill?
I appreciate it, Chair. I appreciate the good discussion and questions today. I just want to thank the testifiers who came before us today and provided feedback on the bill, and you have my commitment to continue working to try to make sure we are getting this right. There was a recent report from North Star Policy Action that noted at our current rate of clean energy construction, we won't reach 100% clean energy until 2062. So we have a lot to do. We need to double the pace of clean energy construction in the state. We know that'll mean good jobs. We know that'll reduce costs because of the low cost of wind and solar. And so I appreciate everybody's support in moving this bill forward and look forward to the discussion ahead.
And with that, I renew my motion that House File 4700 as amended be laid over. Bill is laid over. Thank you, Majority Leader Long. And next on our agenda today, we have House File 4423 with Representative Stevenson. And Representative Stevenson moves House File 4423 be laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Stevenson also has an amendment coded DE1. Representative Stevenson moves the DE1 to get the bill in the shape he would like. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The motion carries and the amendment is adopted. With that, Chair Stevenson, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This bill has to do with modifications to NGIA related to thermal energy networks. With the passage of the 100% bill last year and the path that we're on to decarbonize in the electrical sector, it's very important to focus on other sectors of Minnesota's economy that are still producing emissions, including the building sector. Minnesota has over 1.6 million owner-occupied homes, 600,000 rented homes, and emissions from homes increased by 14% between 2005 and 2020. So we are headed in the wrong direction when it comes to emissions for homes, and we need to take action. We did, as a legislature, on a bipartisan basis, pass a bill, the Natural Gas Innovation Act, several years ago, which allowed our gas utilities to do pilot projects to look at different ways to meet our energy needs in the gas sector. The first NGI plans have come out over the last year, and I'm really excited to see the projects that our gas utilities are undertaking. I've had a chance to visit a couple of them, too. I think it's really neat what is being done. And I look forward for that work continuing. This bill would have our largest gas utility in its next NGIA plan put more of a focus on thermal energy networks. The bill would require that 15% of the funds in the plan be used for thermal energy networks. Worth noting that CenterPoint does have one of these networks in its NGIA plan that they just submitted. So this is already kind of moving along the track that the utility is working on, but we're taking it to the next level. I think it pairs well with several other bills that are out there on geothermal this year. The last piece of it is a report that we're asking for, a thermal energy network site suitability study So this would have the department look across the state of Minnesota about where we might find, from a geological basis, good sites for this type of work. So that's the bill. I know there are a number of testifiers that want to speak to the bill. And I should say, as the testifiers are coming up, we've had really good collaboration on this bill, and I think we've gotten it with the amendment that was just adopted to a place that there's pretty broad support and consensus among the stakeholders, and I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful for all the work that everyone's done to get to that point.
Great. And we do have a few testifiers today. Aurora Vautrin is first with the 100% campaign. Welcome back to the table. Please introduce yourself again for the record, please.
Chair Aiko, members of the committee, Aurora Vautrin with 100% again. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you for Representative Stevenson for your leadership on House File 4423, a bill that will put us on a path to maximizing the benefits of thermal energy networks in our state. Minnesota is making real progress in our transition to a more equitable clean energy future, particularly in our electricity and transportation sectors. But emissions from the residential building sector are trending in the wrong direction, increasing 14% between 2005 and 2020. To reverse course, we need to innovate and scale our solutions, creating more and easier opportunities for homeowners to opt into cleaner heating and cooling. Thermal energy networks, or TENs, can deliver carbon-free heating and cooling efficiently and affordably for many Minnesotans, and are a technology that our state should be prioritizing. These networks have the potential to meaningfully reduce emissions in a sector that is among the most complicated to decarbonize, and help ensure that all Minnesotans have a clean, comfortable, and affordable place to live. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vautrin. Next, we have Patty O'Keefe with Sierra Club. Welcome to committee, Ms. O'Keefe. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, Chair Aikum and members of the committee. My name is Patty O'Keefe, and I'm here on behalf of the Sierra Club North Star chapter, encouraging you to support House File 4423. To meet our statewide goal of net zero energy emissions by I haven't testified in a while and I'm a little nervous.
You're doing great.
To meet the statewide goal of net zero emissions by 2050, all sectors of the economy must eliminate or fully offset emissions by this date. In 2018, burning gas in the Minnesota building sector produced the equivalent of 31 million metric tons of carbon dioxide. That's equal to 8 coal plants. This is 26% of the total emissions from fossil fuel combustion in the state. The MPCA's recent report shows emissions from this sector are increasing and expected to continue increasing, and they will unless we do something about it. It should also be noted that burning gas appliances in our homes, such as gas furnaces, water heaters, stoves, and more, emit toxic chemicals into the air that we breathe. A recent study found that 12.7% of current childhood asthma cases nationwide are correlated with gas stove use. Thermal energy networks are able to deliver climate-friendly heating, cooling, and cooking at the neighborhood level across utility customer classes, which makes decarbonization more scalable. It can also make it more equitable so that no one is left behind in the transition. While we appreciate that the Natural Gas Innovation Act has initiated decarbonization planning, we feel this change is needed to ensure the plans maximize real climate solutions. This has been the warmest year in my 34 years in Minnesota. I talked with my mom yesterday. She's 72, and she said the same thing. The time is now to improve existing policy and create new policy that ensures we meet our decarbonization goals. And for that reason, we'd ask that you support the passage of HF 4423 today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Jamie Fitzke with CenterPoint. Welcome to committee, Ms. Fitzke. State your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Aikum and members of the Energy Committee. I'm Jamie Fitzke, Director of Government Affairs at CenterPoint Energy. CenterPoint Energy is very proud of our commitment to provide safe, reliable, affordable, and increasingly lower carbon emission energy to our Minnesota customers. We're also very proud of spearheading the Natural Gas Innovation Act, or NGIA for short, that was authored by Representative Stevenson and passed with bipartisan support in 2021. And we're also very proud of the fact that we filed the state's first innovation plan with significant stakeholder involvement. This filing awaits PUC review and hopeful approval later this summer. While it might not be synonymous, some like myself call it network geothermal. This bill calls it thermal energy networks, and still others refer to it as district energy. Regardless of the nomenclature, this technology is included in our first innovation plan, which was filed last June. And at utility scale, this will be one of the first of its kind in a cold climate like ours. We appreciate the enthusiasm for this technology, which is reflected in multiple bills this session. We'd like to thank stakeholders who recognize that NGIA is a balance of providing reliable energy to our customers, innovative carbon emissions reduction strategies, and the cost of those strategies. We appreciate the changes reflected in the DE, such as clarifying that this spending minimum applies to future filings, and the considerations that opportunities for growth may also be assisted by a PUC-led network geothermal work group contained in House File 4688, Hemmings and Yeager's bill that we had heard yesterday. This could create a framework to scale or kind of graduate to statewide delivery of geothermal energy from NGIA pilots. We look forward to seeing the impacts and learning opportunities from the NGIA pilots and how network geothermal can be part of our safe, reliable, and affordable energy future. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzgerald.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to also mention, yep, I didn't have time beforehand, but I do have handouts if people are interested in knowing the pilots. Maybe I'll just leave them up over there.
That sounds perfect. Thank you. And next on our list, we have Mike Rollin with Isaiah. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Acom and members of the committee. My name is Mike Rollin. I'm a member of Isaiah, and I live in Minneapolis. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 4423. I'm here today as a lifelong Minnesotan who has seen how our climate has drastically changed in my lifetime and as a father of two teenagers. In our family, we talk about the climate crisis. As we live in these new seasons of heat, wildfire smoke, and a snowless February, we talk about the possibilities for the future that we deserve and the shared responsibility of all in our community to work for that better future. After one of those conversations, my son told me, "Dad, I don't want to live in a hot world." I think of that every day. I know he's not alone in that feeling. In the last year, we've made some important progress for a livable future in Minnesota. We passed the 100% clean energy standard and funding for transit. In Minneapolis, we passed groundbreaking funding for a block-by-block clean energy transition and equitable paths to green union jobs. We can do big things. A place where we now need to do more big things is cutting the rising emissions from our homes and buildings. A critical tool to do that is geothermal networks. With geothermal networks, we can do neighborhood scale projects to more efficiently warm and cool our homes while lowering our bills and making our homes and offices more resilient in our increasingly volatile weather. And to act at the scale needed to meet Minnesota's climate goals, we need to learn how to deploy network geothermal in different communities around the state, to see what works best in cities, in suburbs, and small towns. We need to go from a state with a few geothermal networks to a state full of them. Our current pace just isn't enough. So I'm asking you today to please pass House File 4423 to accelerate geothermal projects across the state for more comfortable, affordable homes, and to ensure that everyone, no matter our race, income, or region, benefits from Minnesota's transition to clean energy. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And last on our list, we have Amy Gilbert with St. Paul 350. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, representatives. Thank you for your work on this vital climate and energy committee. I'm Dr. Amy Gilbert. I'm a family physician living and working in St. Paul for 30 years, and I'm a member of St. Paul 350, which is working for clean and equitable energy in the city of St. Paul. I'm speaking in support of House File 4423. In my house, we've swapped out our gas dryer, our stove, our hot water heater for efficient electrical appliances. We've done as much as we can think to do, and still, This is the warmest winter that Minnesota's ever had, and I despair, knowing that my most committed personal actions do not make a meaningful difference in the trajectory of the climate crisis. As a physician, my patients talk to me about their fears for the future of the Earth and for their grandchildren. They can see that not enough is happening to make a difference. I know that in St. Paul, 60% of our greenhouse gas emissions come from buildings. Geothermal energy offers us the opportunity to switch from fossil gas to non-polluting geothermal energy to heat and cool our buildings. This is a huge and meaningful step. This bill will see that the major utility companies learn to make the transition from fossil gas to safe, sustainable thermal, geothermal energy for all of us. We know we're going to have to stop using fossil fuels. Let's not waste time and money on resources putting in fossil fuel infrastructure that we're going to have to take out in some years. The Heights development in St. Paul is a 112-acre development that can be entirely free of fossil fuel. We're going to have 1,000 housing units, 1,000 good jobs using geothermal energy and all electric buildings. This development can be an inspiration and a model. Part of what's exciting about geothermal, as the previous speaker said, is that it's readily brought to scale for entire communities, to include renters, low-income homeowners, and people that can't afford the upfront cost to put a solar panel on your roof. This bill can expand geothermal to whole communities throughout the state. In short, we need big shifts to get to a healthy climate. Switching the appliances in my house is not going to do it. Prescribing Prozac for my patients is not going to resolve their despair. We can use geothermal energy to heat and cool buildings without fossil fuel. This is doable, and it will make a real difference in the trajectory of climate change. Please support this bill, and then keep working until it's the law. Thank you.
There's no other testifier signed up, and as I look for questions amongst our colleagues, I want to maybe pose a question to the bill author. And why is your bill just focused on one of our gas utilities in Centerpoint and not looking at all of them? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So NGIA itself is limited in which gas utilities it applies to. And so operating within that only to a couple. So this one sticks with our largest gas utility, which is going to have the largest NGIA plan by virtue of their size. And so it certainly makes sense to start with them. You know, we could certainly have conversations with the other two NGIA utilities about what would work for them.
Great. Thank you. Any questions, Representative Swazinski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a kind of a quick question. It seems interesting that, you know, in other areas, so we would require like an electric generator to just simply change the style of electricity that they provide, but we're fundamentally changing what a utility does by this bill, and that's forcing a gas supplier to supply something that's derived through electricity, because geothermal doesn't use gas. Like, how is that benefiting the folks that are invested or the people that use gas to force them to use electricity?
Just
and geothermal, right? Because the pumps run off electricity. It's not like we're going to have the pumps run off gas to run the geothermal.
Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Swazinski, a couple of things to clear up, I think, that are important to understand about a gas utility. Gas utilities are maybe better thought of as a means of delivering gas. You know, CenterPoint doesn't make money off selling us gas. They make money off the infrastructure that delivers gas to our homes. They're a pipeline company, not a natural gas company, which is maybe one of the reasons why CenterPoint, along with other natural gas utilities, helped us pass NGIA a couple of years ago. They were strong supporters of it, as you heard them testify here today. The world is changing. CenterPoint sees it too. We are not going to be able to continue relying on natural gas to heat our homes into the foreseeable future. We are seeing, as many people have said, the warmest winter, certainly of my lifetime, warmest winter in, I think, as far back as records go, if I'm recalling correctly, and where I think we're about to see a pretty devastating wildfire season. The climate crisis is real, and action needs to happen. the natural gas sector isn't immune from that.
Representative Susan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to the Chair Stevenson's, you know, I think it's been estimated that, you know, to eliminate natural gas use in homes across or into communities or whatever you like to say, it's approximate that we'd have to increase electricity generation by 15 gigawatts. So to the actual power that's derived, if you convert that to electricity to heat homes, we're going to have to increase the amount of electricity produced by over 15 gigawatts. 15 million gigawatts, or whatever. It's some big number. Anyway, but sorry. I didn't have my notes with, so a whole bunch. Anyway,
a whole bunch.
And, you know, to the folks that say that, you know, this will, you know, force us to be, you know, this will solve some sort of a climate issue by doing this in Minnesota or forcing this down Minnesotans' throats, you know, this is more of a placebo rather than a Prozac. And the reality is we're not going to get rid of the use of fossil fuels. As a matter of fact, these gases will be either just emitted at site. You know, if we're not running these gases into homes, like, they're going to be flared at site where oil is produced, or the coal that we would like not to be burned in coal plants will be shipped across overseas to China. So while this bill may be a placebo to make you feel better, make you think that we're going to make a difference, like, in all reality, if you burn coal in less efficient, less clean coal plants in China, and not here, because we put it on a train, put it on a boat, and it gets shipped over there when we get rid of it, or we flare natural gas at site because we've got rid of natural gas furnaces in our communities and in our homes and in our kitchens, it's going to get burnt. It's just not going to get burnt in the home. It's just going to get burnt out in North Dakota or the Bakken.
Chair Stevenson, did you have a response for that?
I quite candidly, I'm not sure where to begin. That was quite the journey that we just went on. This bill is about thermal energy networks, and it's not about switching all of our home heating to electricity. It's about thermal energy networks. It's not about coal plants. I'm not sure. There was a number of statements there that I'm not sure are accurate. I think that our energy sector is changing. We need to be leading. We have a climate crisis. The home energy sector right now is increasing in carbon emissions, as we said. This is, NGIA is about looking to how we can stem that and have a home heating sector that makes sense for Minnesotans. And I'd add, on top of everything else we said, Minnesota doesn't produce natural gas. You know, when you are buying natural gas to heat your home, you're sending money out of the state, you know, to somewhere else. We can have an opportunity to do this here in Minnesota with geothermal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That sounded like wonderful closing comments. Representative, or Chair Stevenson renews his motion that House File 4423 be laid over. The bill is laid over. That is all of our business for today. We will see you next Tuesday. This meeting is adjourned.